Try to stay focused on the breath, where you feel it most vividly. If you don't know where it's most vivid, take a couple of good long, deep in and up breaths. And let it calm down to it feels just right. Not too heavy to be comfortable, but not too light that you can't follow it. And don't put too much pressure on it. Don't put too little pressure on it. The Buddha's image is of a person holding a baby chick in his hand. If you squeeze the chick too tightly, it's going to die. If you hold it too loosely, it's going to fly away. So try to keep tabs on the breath with just the right amount of pressure. If you catch the mind wandering off, just bring it back. No matter how many times it's going to wander off in the course of the hour, bring it back, bring it back. Each time you come back, reward yourself with a breath that feels really good. Because you want to get the mind to feel good about being here, so it'll be more likely to settle in and wander off less. Because the less the mind wanders, the more subtle things you'll be able to see. You begin to see when there's a beginning of a stirring that it's going to go out. You can breathe right through it, right in time, so you don't have to leave. You don't have to come back. You're right here. Then you'll be able to see subtle movements of the mind even more clearly, even more subtle movements, as the mind settles down more deeply. Because this is the whole point of concentration practice, is you want to see what you're doing. In the beginning, you're doing two things. One, you're trying to stay with the breath. And then two, you're trying to wean the mind off of its attraction to its distractions. Then as you settle in, it's more just what you're doing right now, i.e. staying with the breath. When you can see that clearly, you'll see a lot of subtle things you never saw in the mind before. And that's where insight comes in. As the Buddha said, discernment begins when you ask the question of someone who seems reliable. What, when I do it, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? Now, you can interpret that on an external level, but you can also interpret on an internal level. The external level is the practice of merit. Generosity leads to long-term welfare and happiness. Virtue leads to long-term welfare and happiness. Developing attitudes of goodwill in the mind leads to long-term welfare and happiness. And those are attitudes you want to develop and actions you want to develop. Because you begin to see more clearly how your actions have an impact on your life. As you act in more skillful ways, life becomes a lot lighter. You feel a lot better about yourself. There are a lot of people out there who, when they're feeling bad about themselves, go see a therapist. And what the therapist should tell them is go out and do something good. Go out and help somebody. Try to be more principled in your actions. And a lot of self-esteem comes from that. Same with developing thoughts of goodwill. You begin to realize you're living in the world without having any ill will for anyone. Of course, it takes time to develop that attitude. It's not like we're born with limitless goodwill. But you can practice. You can tell yourself, what is goodwill? It's a wish for happiness. Where does happiness come from? It comes from actions. So when you're wishing for your own happiness, you're hoping that you will act skillfully. When you're wishing for the happiness of others, you're hoping that they will act skillfully. And that's a wish you can have for everybody. Now, some people on your list of beasts, you might say, well, I'd like to see that person suffer a little bit more before they're happy, but it doesn't really accomplish anything. So even people who are really cruel, doing a lot of damage in the world, you can wish them goodwill because you want them to understand true happiness and act on it. And when you can take that attitude, you're more able to trust yourself in your dealings with other people, and you feel better about yourself. Other people can trust you more, you can trust yourself more. All from just changing the way you act, changing the way you think. this is why they say that the practice of merit is really helpful in the meditation, because it gets you more sensitive to your actions and the power of your actions. As you get the mind deeper in concentration, it's the same issue. What will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? Okay, get the mind really still. And begin to notice how it puts mind states together. You can see it both as you create the mind state of concentration and as you see the mind slipping off and creating other mind states on the side. These mind states will be related to the way you breathe, they'll be related to the way you think to yourself about things, the way you talk to yourself about things, and the perceptions and feelings you have. All these things that the Buddha calls fabrication. He says we do this in ignorance, which is why we suffer, but when we can do it with knowledge, it becomes part of the path. And as for anything that pulls you away from the path, you can ask yourself, would this lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? And if you're honest with yourself, the answer is no. And the next step of wisdom or discernment is, even though you may like the distractions, you have to ask yourself, what can I do so I don't want to go with them? How can I talk myself out of following the distractions? And how can I talk myself into sticking with the meditation, even when it gets difficult at times? That's another aspect of discernment. Because what it comes down to is the question, what's worth doing? The mind is always doing. It's an active principle. We don't just sit here and receive things passively. We're out there looking for things. Why? Because the mind is hungry. It's been looking after this hungry body, and it's hungry itself. It likes sensory input. It likes thoughts. It likes intentions. It feeds off these things. So the question is always, what's good food? What's worth doing? Because the mind is a doing thing. Not just a sitting around passive thing. It's a doing thing. So the big question is, what's worth doing? And that question, what when I do it will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness, that gives focus. And the wisdom lies in the realization that, yes, happiness will depend on your actions, and long-term is better than short-term. But the terms of the question also get translated in another teaching, which is the three perceptions of inconstancy, stress, and not-self. Got my long-term welfare and happiness. So if something is inconstant, it's not long-term. If something is stressful, it's not welfare and happiness. And if it's neither welfare and happiness nor long-term, why would you want to identify with it as mine? So you've got the seeds for the three perceptions. They're a test for that question, what's worth doing? When you're working with your concentration, the concentration is worth doing. The distractions are not. And you want to learn to see them as inconstant, stressful, not self, as a way of getting some dispassion for them, so you can see that they're not worth it. Then as the concentration develops and the field gets more and more clear, then you start looking at the concentration itself and begin to see that this, too, has its ups and downs. This, too, is inconstant. This, too, has levels of stress that rise and fall. And you want to look and see what is it that causes them to rise and fall, because there are the disturbance there. So as the Buddha said, when you master concentration, the next step is to see that it, too, is composed of aggregates, and it, too, doesn't pass the test of these three perceptions. And when it really hits home that you want something better than even concentration can provide in terms of a steady, satisfying happiness. That's when the mind turns to something deathless. If it can really let go at that point, that's a moment of awakening. And you realize that what you did then, that was worth doing. And when the awakening is full, then you can put everything aside. You notice in those questions when the Buddha asks, is this constant or inconstant? Well, it's inconstant. Is something inconstant, stressful, easeful? It's stressful. If something is inconstant and stressful, is it worth holding on to as me, or what myself, or what I am? Notice the conclusion he comes to. Is it worth it? Because the way we have a sense of self, that's an activity too. And there are times in the practice when the self activity is really worthwhile. I mean, it's the self that gets you to be generous. It's the self that gets you to be virtuous and develop goodwill. It's the self that gets you on the meditation cushion and meditating. It's at the final stage when you can let all that selfing go. In the meantime, what you let go of are the selves that would pull you away from the path. You've got lots of selves inside, lots of selves that you've been creating. And those are the ones that you let fall away, let fall away. Learn how not to identify with them. Some of them are going to be hard to let go of because they have their hooks on you. But it's when you can see that these are activities that are not worth doing, that's when you let go. So the conclusion is not, is there a self? The conclusion is, these things are not worth holding on to. It's a very different kind of conclusion. To say that there's no self is to make a metaphysical statement. And some people say, well, if you see there's no self, then there's no more attraction for anything, and you let go. That doesn't work. If you say there's no self, then who's going to be doing the practice? Why is there going to be any point in practicing at all? And to say that seeing that there's no self, everything is inconstant, you let go. It's like saying that you see that food is inconstant, your stomach is inconstant, so you're just not going to eat anymore. As long as the mind is hungry, as long as it sees that certain activities are worth doing, it's going to keep doing them regardless of whether you've slapped the label of self or not self on them. It's when you see the activity is no longer worth it, that there's something better. That's when you let go. So the conclusion is not, is there a self? The conclusion is, these things are not worth holding on to. These things are not worth identifying with. And you know that the insight has gone deeply enough when it opens to a different dimension, where there is no time, there is no space. This is why it's called deathless, because there's nothing there that can die. You need time in order to die, but this is outside of time. You come back from that and you realize that there is that dimension. And the path that took you there, that was really worth it. As long as you still have more stages of awakening to attain, okay, you're going to stick with the path. But your relationship with the world has changed. It's like the moon getting into a resonance. They call that a place in the moon's orbit when its velocity is such and its movement is such that if you were to draw up some equations describing it, one of the members would be divided by zero. And at that moment, if something is divided by zero, you can't predict where it's going to happen. And it changes the relationship. And with final awakening, then it totally changes the relationship. Nothing has any more claws on the mind. Nothing has any more hooks on the mind. That's really worth discovering. At that point, everyone who's been there said the question of self and not-self, this doesn't come up. After all, self and not-self, these are perceptions. You let them go way back. because you find something more solid, more real, more valuable. So insight is a value judgment. Then you learn to make yourself, as you meditate, a more reliable judge of what's worth doing, what's not, what your values really are. And what kind of actions are worth it? What kind of actions, when you do them, lead to long-term welfare and happiness, the ones that pass the test? And when you gain that, you don't have to be told by anybody that you've gained anything particular. Now, who told the Buddha that he was awakened? He had that, he knew. That's the kind of quality of this attainment. Doesn't depend on what anybody says. You see that the suffering you created for yourself in the past is no longer there. And there's no more potential for it. So how can you help but realize that this is really worth it?